Could you please turn with me to Daniel chapter 6? The prophecy of Daniel and chapter 6. Daniel and chapter 6, and we will start reading in verse 1. You remember on Saturday morning, we started with the series on Daniel, and we looked at an overview and an introduction to the book. And in the afternoon, I've decided, given that the book is divided into two sections, a practical section and a prophetical section, we've decided to focus on the practical section of chapters 1 to 6. We've started with chapter 1, and this afternoon, with the Lord's help, we will conclude with chapter 6. So Daniel chapter 6 verse 1, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. And over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, or rather one of them, that the princes might give account unto them, and the king should have no damage. Verse 3. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and the princes, because of an excellent spirit, was in him. And the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Now I want you to take note of the following verse 4. Then the presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, concerning his service, concerning his secular service. But they could find none occasion or fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against Daniel, except they've tried the secular work, they tried the king's service, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. And we trust the Lord to bless the reading of his scriptures. Many people can point to a significant point in their lives where everything changed for them. You can call it a turning point or a watershed moment. The turning point in Daniel's life was when, as a boy, he was taken away from everything he held dear to serve one of the most wicked kings in the world. It didn't make him bitter. It made him better. What a challenge. Didn't make him bitter, it made him better. Think of the nation of Israel, of Judah rather. This disobedient and rebellious nation of Judah, they deserve the captivity. They deserve the punishment. And yet, God was gracious toward him when he sent Daniel ahead of the nation. And by the time the whole nation arrived in Babylon, Daniel had already been there 18 years. At this stage, he was second in command. The second most powerful man in the country, in the nation. So that Daniel had been for his people in Babylon what Joseph had been for his people in Egypt. At the beginning of his life, as a teenager, in chapter 1, Daniel stood with four of his friends. He's come to the end of his life. He's in his mid-80s. And he stood alone. It was not easy to stand in chapter 1, but it was a little easier because he had friends. He had men who stood with him, but by himself, as an old man, he stood alone. He's outlived all the kings of Judah. He's outlived the kings of Babylon.
He lived and he served in two different empires. The Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire. And in this wicked and dark environment, he shone as a light from God, a light from heaven. During those dark years, he was a monument of faithfulness, a monument of loyalty and commitment to his God. And so the charge to those four men in chapter 1 was, diet or die. We've seen that on Saturday. Diet or die. You come to chapter 3 and there was another test, the test of fire. And here the challenge was, bow or burn. When we come to chapter 6, Daniel alone, the challenge was, be true or be torn. Be true or be torn. Many of you know the Shakespeare play, Hamlet. In that play, there was a contemplation of life and death. And a fear for the unknown, a fear for the future, which led him to say, to be or not to be. You know that. To be or not to be. Or there's a different challenge in the book of Daniel. In chapter 1, the challenge was to eat or not to eat. They were under pressure. In chapter 3, it was to bow or not to bow. They were under fire, literally and figuratively. Now in chapter 6, the challenge for Daniel was to pray or not to pray. Daniel was under scrutiny. Now on Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, in the Bible reading, we've looked at the topic of assembly prayer, collective prayer. My exercise is to look at chapter 6 from a different angle, and we want to see individual prayer, personal prayer, private prayer. If I could sum up chapter 6 in two words, if I could sum up my message in two words this afternoon, it would be this: the closet. The closet. Daniel has already been through many trials and many tests of faith in his life. This is the last test. This is the last trial. But it's going to be more severe than all the other trials combined. The focus of this test was his prayer life. The focus of his test was the closet. They attacked the closet. Why the closet? You see, the closet, Daniel's prayer life, was the secret behind his character. It was the secret behind his commitment to God. It was the secret behind his courage. So that in verses 1 to 5, you will discover that the closet determined his character. The closet determined his character. In verses 6 to 15, you will discover the closet was the drive behind his commitment. The closet was the drive behind his commitment. And in verses 16 to 28, the closet was the dynamic behind his courage. The dynamic behind his courage. In verses 1 to 5, the closet determined his character. What is character? Character is living with integrity even when no one is watching. Oh, we can pretend. We can fool people. Character is living with integrity when no one is watching. Someone made a difference, distinguish between reputation and character. And this is what he says. Reputation is what other people think of you. That can change. Character is who I am. Character is who I am. A reputation can be manipulated. character remains unchanged. My brother, my sister, your character can be your greatest testimony. We've seen how Lot's character had been spoiled. It spoiled his testimony. Your character can be your greatest testimony. But I can tell you, if it's a righteous character, you will become a target in the world. In fact, you might even be a target among the saints, as we see in the life of Daniel. And so in verses 1 to 2, the king appointed 120 princes over the whole empire. 120 princes. And over them, he appointed 3 main men, presidents. Daniel was one of them. You wonder, how did a Jewish exile got to that point, to that position in this empire? The result of his character and his practical skill and his wisdom is seen in verse 3. There was an excellent spirit in Daniel. And as a result, he was preferred above the presidents and the princes. Above them all. They would have been terrified. A godly man in authority is a threat to everyone under that authority, and every ungodly man and woman under that authority. You see, this explains why the princes and the presidents turned against Daniel. Because of his excellent spirit, the king decided to put him above them. Not only above the princes, but also above the presidents. And so his character came under scrutiny. His life came under scrutiny. He became the target. They tried their very best to discredit his character. But they failed to find anything to bring him down. They failed to plot his downfall. You know why? In life and in his service to the king, Daniel displayed a godly character. What did he do? He served the king with the same devotion that he served his God. I want you to notice that. He served his king with the same devotion that he served his God. Oh, you think of the workplace. When the bosses are there, what do? I remember when I was a student at a part-time work. When the boss is around, the manager is around, there's no better employee. But as soon as the boss turns his back, you relax. This man had character. A godly character. He served his God with the same devotion. Not only that, his work ethic reflected his reverence for God. His spiritual and secular lives were fundamentally linked. And we tend to have a church life and a home life, a church life and a work life, a church life and a social life. We should reflect a godliness in every aspect of our lives. They turned against Daniel because the king planned to set him over the whole empire. Daniel's excellent spirit made him a target. When they discovered there's an excellent spirit in the man, he became a target in the world. And they targeted him. But his character made him bulletproof. His character made him untouchable. So you'd say, what is character like? What made him untouchable? What made him bulletproof? You go back to chapter 1, he was a teenager. And now he's an old man of about 85 years old. For the best of 70 years, he lived a consistent life. The other day, somebody was talking about his own life, his Christian life. He says, it's just up and down over the years. For the best part of 70 years, he lived a consistent life. He was never embittered about his unfortunate circumstances. He was condemned, all right. But when he was condemned for his righteousness. He himself was blameless. Righteous living, however, often provokes, or shall I say, righteous living always provokes criticism and opposition. And so his opponents and his enemies were going to try to find a fault, a flaw in his character. And so they tried it in verse 4. We've repeated that. We put an emphasis in our reading in verse 4. They've tried something against the king. Something about his service where they could fault him. They couldn't find anything whatsoever. What a character. And so they came to the conclusion in verse 5. If we cannot find something in his secular word, in his service toward the king, we need to find something else. Listen to verse 5. We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel except, oh, they found something, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. They knew Daniel to be a man of prayer. And so they decided to go after his prayer life. They attacked the closet. The closet. I wonder, my brother and sister, is your life so marked by integrity and righteous living that people, your enemy, has to go after your devotion for God and attack that it which is spiritual? So how did they do it? What did they do? They resorted to the law of the land. You see, they are no longer in Babylon. In Babylon, the laws were strictly applied. But the king could change it. The king could change it based on his wills. Not in Persia. Even today, you read history books and you will learn something of the law of the Medes and the Persians. What is unique about this law? It cannot be changed. Once it's in place, it is irreversible, it is unchangeable, unalterable. And so these men went to the king. And they deceived the king into writing a decree against prayer, writing a law against the closet, that no one is allowed to pray to any god. And if they did, it would be punishable with death in the lion's den. What tremendous pressure on Daniel. You remember, as a young man, he stood against the king's diet. Now, as an older man, he's going to stand against the king's decree. Against the king's decree. And somebody might have said, Daniel, how far are you prepared to go in being faithful to God? You've already been through so much over the last 70, 80 years. Why bother? Do you really have to show you have so much to lose that now that you are the most important man beside the king? Beside Daniel, everybody knows where you stand. They know what you believe. They know your commitment to prayer. Just let it slide. Surely, you deserve a little peace now that you are an old man. Not Daniel. Daniel was committed, and he remained committed to his God. You ask the question, what was behind this uncompromising commitment? I'm sure you know the answer. The closet. So when you come to verses 6 to 15, you will find, first of all, in the first part, the closet determined his character. But now in verses 6 to 15, you will discover the closet. The closet was the drive behind this uncompromising commitment. When Daniel became aware of the plot against his life, it made no difference to his prayer life. He was committed to the closet. The decree was designed to force Daniel to choose between his God and his king. He didn't panic. He prayed. He didn't protest. He prayed. He didn't hide. He prayed. He didn't compromise. He prayed. And his commitment to God and his commitment to the closet triumphed over the fear of men. You see, his prayer life wasn't convenient. It was consistent. In verse 10, he continued to pray with his windows open. This was no secret compromise. He didn't change his routine of prayer, not even when men passed a law against him. What commitment? You see, he didn't pray more, and he didn't pray less. He simply continued to pray as he's always done. Now that, my brother and sister, is commitment. What was behind such commitment? It is the closet. You ask, were there no other alternative? Sure there was. He could have prayed at night. No one would have seen him. He could have prayed quietly in his heart. No one would have heard him. He could have closed his windows. No one would have known. However, such actions would give place to men, place to the enemy, and it would rob God of glory. Why is our prayer lives so inconsistent, so weak, so sporadic, so undisciplined? We don't fail to sleep. We don't fail to go to work. We don't fail to eat. And yet, we find it so easy to skip the closet. The closet. Can I tell you something about the closet? Every moment we spend time in the closet will deposit strength that you might not need immediately, but in a day to come, when the pressure comes on, when the world attacks, it will stand you in good stead. And so when under scrutiny, and Daniel was under scrutiny, when the pressure comes, we don't suddenly become strong. We don't suddenly become faithful. No, we show ourselves strong and faithful in the crisis, because we've been practicing it all along in the closet. If you're going to be strong in the fire, as we've seen in chapter 3, if you're going to be strong in the den, the lion's den, then you must frequent the place where faith is quietly built. Daily prayer. Daily devotion. Daily seeking the face of God. The closet. Now, from experience, I can tell you, it's easier said than done. And I'm sure many can attest to that. Sometimes we allow even legitimate things to keep us from our spiritual disciplines. You don't need to be an early morning person. I've tried that, I failed. But you do need to make time during the day to spend time in God's Word, to spend time in the closet, to meditate upon what God is telling you. We sing in the Sunday school. Daniel was a man of prayer. Daily, he prayed 3 times. You see, as I studied Daniel's life, I'm surprised. I'm surprised 3 times. You'd go home, you'd open the windows, you'd spread his mat, you would face Jerusalem 3 times a day. It takes time, it takes effort. This man was slowed under with his administration. He had responsibility for 122 men, princes, presidents. He had no time. And yet, regardless of the personal and official demands of the day, he would make time to enjoy personal audience with God. Here's a man who is on speaking terms with heaven. Here's a man who was daily linked with a throne that rules and controls the universe. We've heard it over the weekend. The Samson generation, a link with heaven, a love of the world. But then there's the Daniel generation, a link with heaven, and we see the link, a daily link, a link with heaven, but also a love of God. No wonder this man accomplished so much for God, and no wonder he was committed to the closet. Commitment. However, commitment always comes at a cost. There's always a price to pay. Because Daniel's commitment to the closet provided the enemies with evidence to go to the king. This man is guilty. This man disobeyed the law of the Medes and the Persians. Now, the king was convinced that Daniel was innocent of any real crime and that this was a scheme cooked up by his enemies. The king knew that. But the king was between the rock and the hard place. He was governed by a law that couldn't be changed, a law that couldn't be reversed. He wanted to help Daniel. We see this in this chapter. But he was powerless to save Daniel. And in the end, Daniel was thrown into a den of lions. In that den, I would have sent texts, WhatsApp messages, pray for me. I would have lifted up my hands to heaven and said, God, help me. I have clean hands. I have holy hands, as we see on Saturday night. The man in whom the king had absolute confidence and complete confidence was now chained with a crime. What did Daniel do? Daniel showed tremendous courage when he faced the lions, when he was in the den. Why? Because verses 16 to 18 tells us the answer. The closet. The closet was the dynamic behind this courage. Someone defined courage in a very challenging manner. At least I found it challenging. It says, real courage, true courage, is confidence in God when circumstances are impossible. Now I'm sure you've been there before. When circumstances are impossible, what do we do? Well, this man says, real and biblical courage is confidence in God when circumstances are impossible. So at this point, Daniel is thrown in the lion's den. In chapter 3, King Nebuchadnezzar was faced with the disobedience of 3 men, Daniel's friends. He knew something about the knowledge of God and the wisdom of God and the insight of God. When God revealed his dreams, he knew nothing about the power of God. Remember what he said? Who is this God who delivered you from my hands? No one is more powerful than I am. He had no knowledge of the power of God, but not Darius. Not in Darius. He knew something, even a little, about the absolute power of Daniel's God. We read in verse 16, the second part. The king said to Daniel, in an attempt to encourage Daniel, he says, "Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." But he had his doubts. He had his doubts. He knew something about the power of God. He knew nothing about God here. His almighty power. And so in verse 17, a stone was placed over the mouth of the den. Humanly speaking, deliverance was impossible. Impossible. I've been there many times. When circumstances seem impossible, I've come to the end of my period. You see, that's exactly the circumstances that God specializes in. He specializes in the impossible. He will come through for his own when it is unthinkable. He often uses, like in this case, insurmountable opportunities to demonstrate his power and his ability. That night, the king couldn't sleep. The king had no rest. Verse 18, he couldn't sleep. He fasted all night. He even refused entertainment. Now you think that we enjoy entertainment with Facebook and Instagram and all these things that we scroll. Entertainment for Persian kings was one of the most important pastimes. Not interested. There's a man of God in the lion's den innocently. And though this man fasted, the king fasted, he had no peace and no rest. In verse 19 to 20, he rose up early in the morning and he went to the lion's den with no hope to find him alive. After a sleepless night, he was not so confident anymore when he went to the lion's den and he discovered something that we discovered last night. After a sleepless night, joy cometh in the morning. He's about to discover that. You think that Daniel was just as busy in the lion's den, praying, fearing, being anxious and crying out to God for deliverance? Absolutely not. While the king had a restless night and a peaceless night, Daniel was absolutely at peace. In the den, among the lions, he courageously displayed a confidence, a peace, a trust in God that flowed from his confidence in God. You see, Daniel didn't learn to trust God in the den. In fact, it was too late. He learned to trust him in the secret place, in the closet. His faith wasn't forged in the crisis. How often do we run to God when we're in trouble? His faith was not forged in the crisis. It was cultivated on his knees, in the closet. You see that?